Hey, hi, hello, and welcome to my beauty industry enthusiasts, content creators, and brand visionaries. Get ready to step into a world where beauty meets business, where the creator economy blends seamlessly with strategy. I'm Sonia Elise, and this is Lip Service, the podcast. We're about to redefine the way that you think about the beauty industry. From the boardroom to the makeup room, we're leaving no stone unturned. Lip Service is your backstage pass to the beauty industry's best kept secrets. Now take out your notebook, fill up your emotional support water bottle, and swipe on your favorite lip gloss. Let's get into the episode. Welcome back to Lip Service, the podcast with me, Sonia Elise. Today we are joined with a long time industry friend, Eileen. Welcome to the podcast, Eileen.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So Eileen is a long-term specialist in communications, social media, early days. We're going to get into her past, but also she's currently a beauty exec at one of your favorite beauty brands. We're going to leave it up to mystery later on in the show before we get into it. But Eileen and I have known each other maybe 10 years?
I know.
Maybe more.
Insane. Yeah.
Wild, right? So first, before we dive in on getting to know you better and your perspective on the industry right now, I would love for you to tell us what's on your face today.
Well, right now I'm actually not wearing any makeup, believe it or not.
She's barefaced.
I know. But no, it's a lot of skincare. I'm like really, really into skincare these days. Like that's all I've been really focusing on. Not wearing a ton of makeup. And when I do, it's mostly like a little bit of concealer. I'm back in the highlight moment. I feel like 2016 makeup is going to have a resurgence. And then like a lip. I love a good lip. But right now it's just all skincare. I'm trying to get my skin back on track.
Amazing. What skincare are you like relying on? Holy grail right now.
Ooh, how much time do you have? Truly one of my like hardcore staples. So I suffer from like dehydrated skin when it gets cold out. And I always go back to Advanced Night Repair by Estee Lauder. Of course, I worked there for like 6 years. And so is it that I sip the Kool-Aid? Perhaps. But it's really, really good. And anytime I've noticed that like if my skin is like super dry or if it's acting up, I always go back to it. And like truly like within a week, you know, it's back to feeling like healthy, radiant, like the dry patches are gone. So it's like I always have backups at home.
Fantastic. It's backstocked. I love it.
Truly. I hoard it.
Amazing. And where are you finding creativity right now out in the world? Like what's inspiring you? It can be literally anything that has crossed your path.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. TikTok, only because I feel like people are unbelievably creative on that platform. I don't even see a ton of beauty content. I'm just like served people who just like are either really funny or who can come up with like clever ways of doing things. And so I always find myself getting inspired there. And then this is like a little bit old school. I've truly gone back to taking my little walks. I call them my sanity walks. And since I live on the Upper East Side, like walking around Central Park, I just find that like being able to take a step back and really like think about other things other than work or like the problem at hand is how I've like gotten, you know, my little spark back.
Amazing. All right. And last question before we dive into the episode. Unfortunately, you die tomorrow. Deceased. So sorry. What one product are you taking into the afterworld with you? What goes to the grave?
Oh my God. I'm like, wait, do we have like sun protection in the afterworld? Like, is it dark?
I know, right?
Tell me, what's happening?
Everyone has interpreted differently. So I guess it's also a deeper exploration as to what you think is happening in the afterlife.
Like, what's happening in the, I'm like now questioning everything that I think of. I would say probably lip balm. I'm currently obsessed with lip care also. So between the Summer Fridays, like lip butter balm, specifically the, is it mint? The one in the light green tube?
Ooh, yes.
Obsessed. I have a million of them. Or the Bobbi Brown Extra Plump Lip Serum. Spoiler, I do work for Bobbi. So that's like, you know, but I think that one is, again, I've gone through like 7 tubes. So probably one of those two. You can't have dry lips in the afterlife.
Definitely not. You got to be ready to pucker up at a moment's notice.
Right? I might meet somebody.
Okay, Eileen, so you have already teased that you do work for Bobbi Brown, but before you got to this exec level amazing position, I was so happy to see you get here. I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago you made your LinkedIn announcement, and I was like, yes, she's made it. She's arrived. Fantastic. But before all of the glory, let's talk about how you got here. How, like, what is the journey like?
Well, thank you. I always joke that like I'm a true digital native. So I started off as a blogger back in college. And, you know, back then blogging or content creation wasn't really a thing. We were just getting started. And so again, I was like a 19-year-old kid being invited to all these like brand events, and we're all just kind of like figuring it out. But since I was still in school, I was still kind of like navigating what is it that I wanted to do in life. You know, I wanted to be a lawyer, but then I got an internship at Lancôme. They actually found me through my blog, which I think was one of the more aha moments. They found me through my blog, shout out to Carrie Diamond, and they gave me an internship, and she was like, hey, I read on your blog that you need an internship and like, we need an intern. Do you want to be our first social media intern? And that was wild because like, I didn't think that, you know, opportunities like that existed. I didn't come from a place where we understood internships. You know, I was the first to go to college. So I just didn't have that level of access. So I think that was the first time where I realized that, oh, okay, like, you know, you could potentially get a career out of this. And, you know, my former boss at the time was the first person to be like, hey, you know, I think this industry is going to be a thing. Maybe you should pursue it full time. And so I paused on law school and on pursuing that career. And I just like, okay, let me go and see if I can be, you know, the social media manager at brands. And from there, I went to the agency side. I still continued my blog because that's how I was able to build relationships with people. But I went on the agency side, and I was able to, you know, I worked with Aveda, MAC Cosmetics, Barbie for a small period of time, Nine West. So all these really heritage brands, and like, I was the voice on like their Facebook page. And again, I was so young and we were still figuring it out. And it was such a really cool time. And like, I always joke and laugh. I'm like, nothing is new because, you know, back then we were live streaming. True.
I know.
Like, and now, you know, live streaming became like a big thing in 2020 again. Like, we recycled the trends. And so, you know, a lot of what I did back then, I still think was like first and exciting. But yeah, so after agency, I went on in-house to Moroccan Oil. I really wanted to be in-house at a beauty brand. I wanted to go in small. So I launched the social media team for Moroccan Oil. And, you know, we were, again, small but mighty. It was me and like an intern. And that was great because, again, I got to see strategy. I got to really touch on being the voice of a brand. And it was just a really exciting time. I think by that point, you know, social media was a little bit more established, but
yeah,
still a growing industry. And then about 8 years ago, I went on to the Estee Lauder companies. Again, found me just through LinkedIn, social, and the fact that I had a blog at the time was still very exciting to them. And so I came in and really like started up the influencer marketing team for Estee Lauder. And I've been here since.
Amazing. So all the way from influencer, blogger, this is probably, if I remember correctly, I don't know what year it was, but you were pre-Instagram when you were blogging.
Pre-Instagram. Yep. And Instagram completely changed everything. I started my blog in, I want to say 2007, because again, I was still in university. So yeah, again, I was a kid. I was 19 years old, pre-Instagram. And then in 2010, I think Instagram came about and like, you know, it went from bloggers to like influencers and Instagrammers and like OOTDs and trying to get that. And I know.
OOTDs. I miss it.
We're all posing out in Soho getting our OOTDs.
I know. And now the girlies are back out there getting their OOTDs for TikTok.
The girlies are back. I work in Soho and it's so funny seeing people just like, now I think it's more like reckless and abandoned. Like people don't mind as much. Yeah. Back then, like we were hiding to take our little OOTDs.
Absolutely.
Like no one, you know.
Yeah.
But now it's like there are people like live streaming out in front of the office. There are people like live streaming in front of the stores. Yeah.
I love it.
Now it's like odd if you don't have a camera in your hand, like talking to it. You know?
So true. Whenever I see the girlies out doing the OOTDs in Soho, because I'm also very close and I go to work at 11 Howard a lot, which has a lot of like the vibes mm-hmm. near it. I always want to like cheer them on because I know how embarrassing it feels. So I almost want to just like yell out like, yeah, girl, you look great.
Get that shot.
Get the look. Oh my goodness. Well, we have definitely seen a lot, but a lot in influencer marketing. I know you started out kind of as an influencer, early blogger, on the other side, getting approached by brands, both for your blog and your presence online. Mm-hmm. And then as you were brought into companies as the strategist behind it all. What are some of like the key moments that you would say have changed over that span of time? Because as someone who's been in it, like as long as you have, it's wild to be like, by the way, I've done it for a decade. Like when right. I see the kids on TikTok being like, this is the advice for influencers. I'm like, let me tell you.
Right.
That's not it.
Right. It's so funny because in my mind, I'm like, I'm still the kid.
I know, right? We'll never grow up. People are always like, you seem so young. And I'm like, it's because I'm stuck in like a Peter Pan mode because I'm online.
100%. 100%.
But what are the key moments that you have said have like changed the influencer industry over those years outside of like the invention of brand new platforms?
I mean, I do think, you know, Instagram launching and really taking over because, mm-hmm. you know, before that we mentioned, again, people were bloggers. So people were really invested in an influencer. You know, you had to sit there and write your content and people were committed to reading, you know. And Instagram completely changed the way I think we consumed content. I would say Instagram and YouTube, because it went from being something that you would sit and read and like dedicate time to mm-hmm. now everything was truly like mobile, right? Like I think most of us were probably reading blogs on our laptops or what have you. But Instagram, everything became mobile and visual. And so a lot of the people that you see who had success were able to transition from, you know, being able to write to more visual content. And how do you make that appealing? And how do you work with a brand on mm-hmm. like a little image that was authentic to you, but still gets what the brand needs? And so I think that was a very interesting time to work in influencer marketing, because I think we saw a lot of people who were really strong writers who suddenly, you know, their quote unquote relevance was gone, right? Mm-hmm. Because they weren't able to do the right image. So I would definitely say that pivot to more visual content and then video content, right? Because if mm-hmm. you look at the Instagrammers who were great at taking stills, now they're probably not really succeeding on TikTok, right? Like mm-hmm. you need to have like that personality and to have that ability to draw mm-hmm. people in to really have that longevity. And not a lot of people can do it. And so when you look at kind of like, how do you define relevance? For me, it's like seeing the people who can seamlessly, you know, transition between the different platforms and still maintain that authority.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree on those pivotal moments. And I would also add like the difference between curation to authenticity. That I think has been a pivotal moment in the industry, no matter what platform you are on, going 100%. From being like, you know, the feed is so curated, it's color coded, it's this, it's mm-hmm. that. And then now into like share everything, be best friends with everyone, like you're everywhere. I think that was also a huge moment. And I have to give it up to like, I think LTK.
Yeah,
they changed the game for influencer marketing, for creators, for monetization. Like there mm-hmm. would be no careers moving forward without their innovation. So thank you, Amber, for that.
Big thank you to Amber. No, I mean, that's like LTK for me, it was like when that really happened, just being on the brand side, it's like, oh my mm-hmm. God, you can get data. You can really like see who's driving sales. But then as a mm-hmm. creator, because I was part of their network, you know, I was able to get money for things that I was doing naturally, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was talking about the brands like, oh, you want to give me a link? Great. And like, it was just such a great way to earn that revenue. So, you know, as someone who was a part-time influencer and working full-time, it was like a revenue stream that I didn't have to think about. And if you think about the girls who were, you know, doing this full-time, I'm like, wow, no wonder this career can take off, is because you've mm-hmm. now found another way to diversify your revenue stream, right? It's no longer relying on the brand partnerships.
Mm-hmm. I think you also touched on something great when you talked about there's not that many people who've been able to evolve with every single platform. And we see drop off all the time of people who are like, this is just no longer for me. But of the people who you have seen evolve, like who are some of your favorites that you're like, you're just going to keep winning because you have magic. Mm. Like something good is happening here.
Oh, this might be so biased, but Jackie Ina, she is so great at connecting with people. And I think that's mm-hmm. her secret sauce, right? Mm-hmm. She is not just about like influencing you to buy things. She just has an amazing personality and it really comes through. So, you know, she was an early adopter on YouTube. I remember I was like watching her way, way back in the day and mm-hmm. she's managed to, you know, evolve as YouTube itself evolved, had an amazing presence on Instagram. And then, you know, seeing her being able to seamlessly transition into TikTok while also pivoting her brand. And, you know, there wasn't that drop off because sometimes, you know, as influencers, if they go from like one vertical to another, people like, you've changed and I don't want to support you. No, her people have been loyal, me being one of those. And so it's, I really respect and admire how she's been able to kind of like sustain that momentum and that mm-hmm. maintain that integrity and the authenticity that you talk about. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing it pay off because, you know, she has her own brand and she still works with brands, but it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think like when you zoom out and you look at the greater scheme of things of people who started maybe in the blogging days or very early YouTube days to now, there mm-hmm. are superstars now, right? But they may have only become superstars because of TikTok, because of something else that happened more recently. But we're talking like over a decade mm-hmm. of being able to transition with your audience and with technology. And the amount of people on that roster is very little. Like my personal favorite is Chriselle Lim. She'll be like a gold standard for me to like have moved from writing to mm-hmm. Instagram to video and YouTube and TikTok and share her life, but also be inspirational. And now like owning the brand, it's like, whoa, yeah, girl did it.
Yeah. And she's grown as her audience has grown. Right.
Yes.
And like, it's one of those, like you see them evolve as a person. So, you know, cause I'm mm-hmm. a big Chriselle fan too, but like, you know, how do you keep that audience engaged as like mm-hmm. you get older, your interests might change, you know, she has kids, they're getting older. So it's like, mm-hmm. How do you keep that relevance and that connection to your audience? And she did a phenomenal job of being transparent with her audience, but still maintaining that aspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I have said on this podcast many times, and I tell the creators that I work with all the time, is if you're not personally evolving, your presence cannot evolve, your audience cannot evolve. I think mm-hmm. one thing that is very underestimated is how much personal reflection and work it requires to be an influencer. Like, it's weirdly deep work that needs to be done.
Yeah, because people are invested in you, right? Like working a corporate job, like, yeah, you're investing in the brand, the company, but things change, right? It's like it's very clear it's a business transaction. When it comes to influencers, like you are the product. So people, as they're growing, they want to see that you're growing, that you're evolving. And it is very deep. It's a very intense relationship that you can have with your followers.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. All right. So let's fast forward more to, let's just say, the last year or even the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing in your role now, or just generally overarching, is happening in influencer marketing? What are people talking about in the boardroom, in the meetings, in the nitty gritty that you think is like, this is a theme that's going to be recurring now for strategy?
I mean, when it comes to, I would say, influencer work and partnerships, is that return to quote unquote like authenticity. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you build these meaningful stories that are still relevant, especially if you look at platforms like TikTok, where the content is less about who you follow and more about the algorithm. So before mm-hmm. it was all about like follower counts and this and that. Yeah. And now it's kind of like, you can work with like a really small creator who just constantly goes viral or something, right? Like, or you can find a very niche community mm-hmm. that is so engaged that they're going to do like numbers for you. So it's kind of like, how do you maintain that authentic storytelling and really involve the creator in the process? Because before, you know, gone are the days where people are just accepting money for, you know, a sponsored post. Like, they're not going to hold up your product and power it off mm-hmm. the talking points. Whereas I think before that was something that you could easily do. Now it's kind of like, you really have to understand the mind of a creator and like their followers and the platform and what's sticky. So it's a lot more intentional versus being mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm just going to pay someone to, you know, list off my key benefits or anything. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then I think just like marketing in general has completely changed, right? Gen Z is such a different, you know, beast when it comes to working with them and just seeing what resonates for them. So, you know, the marketing funnel is not as it was once was. So you can't think of like the consumer journey as being super linear. You really have to think about like, okay, they might see it on TikTok and then they go to mm-hmm. Sephora, but then they go back on TikTok or they're on TikTok at Sephora. So it's kind of like, how do you really market to someone and how do you find content or create content that's relevant to them? So the marketing funnel is no longer linear and it's truly has collapsed. And I think, you know, Vogue Business just did something not too long ago where they're talking about, you know, Gen Z is completely different. While they rely on influencers, that's not the only thing. So it's how mm-hmm. can you maintain that relevance and that humor and some of the things that before brands weren't necessarily supposed to be doing.
Yeah, which are really the hardest things to do because how do you take essentially an inanimate object and animate it on a personalized level? Like I just did a video not that long ago because I think a similar article was also in Glossy about how Gen Zs want to be marketed to and what works and what doesn't. And, you know, I started it with like Gen Z is a marketer's worst nightmare because
100%.
I mean, it's like be everywhere all at once, sell without being sold to, be a best friend, be cool, be inspirational. I'm like,
but don't be cringe and don't try too hard. You know, you can be funny, but that might be weird. So.
Exactly.
But I love it. I love it. Even some of the Gen Z people that I work with, like I love seeing how they react to things because I'm like, mm-hmm. wow, like this would have done numbers back in the day. But like I love working. I get a lot of inspiration from, you know, Gen Z in general because like, they don't want to be marketed to and they'll tell you straight up. But I think sometimes like they do want to be marketed to, they just don't want to be so overt.
Yes, it's definitely a fine line, 100%. And I'm the same with you. I think any good marketer is always like so interested in the way people work and the way mm-hmm. people think. And the great part about marketing is that it is always evolving, which is why it's such like an exciting career because you never rest.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I've stayed it for, I mean, again, I was supposed to go to law school. In my mind, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this for like maybe a couple of years, go back mm-hmm. to law school and become a lawyer. The things that I've learned from like the beginning of my career to now and like even the platforms and, you know, how to do things, it's changed so rapidly that I'm like, wow, I've only been in this, I've been doing this for what, 15 years, but I feel like I've lived 1,000 lives.
Absolutely. It is so difficult sometimes. Okay. So we know that you work at Bobbi Brown. You work a lot with influencers, both at the brand and previously. What are some things you would like to tell influencers in terms of like the best way to get on the radar? Like some basics. A lot of people who listen to this podcast are newbies. They are aspiring. They're growing quickly. They definitely have a love for beauty and they want to know like what is the best way to approach to, you know, show up correctly. Like what are some of the key things that you wish new creators knew?
Okay. Well, firstly, I would say be an authentic fan of the brand because you can kind of see it from a brand side, right? So how often are you using the products? Like how mm-hmm. naturally do you speak to it? Because I always look at people who are already speaking about me, right? Because I don't have to sell you on a product. You automatically love what I, you know, the brand that I work for. So just again, natively tagging the brand, creating content as you normally would. And it comes up, right? You know, there are so many dashboards and tools that tell us mm-hmm. who's talking about us. So just be an authentic fan. That's one. I think if you're interested in working with brands and you're already a fan, and let's say you're not, you know, buying a ton of products, but you're interested in working with the brand, be focused on building that relationship. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest changes that I've seen over the past, I would say 10 to 15 years is there was a time period where everyone was like, if they're not paying me, I'm not working with a brand. Gifting is still very important, right? Yes, mm-hmm. it's free products, but that's a way that the brand can see who's actually raising their hand and saying, yep, I really want to work with you. So build on that relationship. If a PR person reaches mm-hmm. out to you and offers you product, if you are accepting, great, accept the product, naturally use it if you like it. try to, if you're in a city like New York or LA, if you're close to the brand, try to get coffee with the PR team. If you're not, just like reach out to them via email, stay updated. Like we pay attention to that, right? And if it's an agency, even if it's an agency side, keep on the relationships because that's who we remember, right?
Like absolutely. You're thinking of like,
oh, that girl is so great. She loves, you know, our mm-hmm. eyeshadows, or, oh my God, she's the biggest fan for this product. We'll automatically think of them. And like, that's who goes in the decks. And as we're trying to build out the strategies and go, you know, ask our higher ups for money. Those are the people that we're using as inspiration. So definitely keep that relationship and be, you know, top of mind for them. And of course, if you're getting to the point where you're getting a lot of maybe too much gifting and you have to narrow it down, or if it's overwhelming, be willing to work with the brands when it comes to sponsorships, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're not always going to have money for always on programming, right? Mm-hmm. So think of the key moments, like holiday, for example, mm-hmm. is a big time when brands would need someone. Think of key other moments, like I'm making it like Coachella, and, you know, work with the brand to see what you can do with them. And if it's not now, trust me, they'll think of you for something else if you're, you know, trying to be a partner. But if every time they reach out and they're like, nope, I want X amount of money or we can't work together, that's like an mm-hmm. immediate turn off.
Yep. 100%. I mean, you just reflected pretty much every bullet point that we also talked about in episode one with an agency owner that works in beauty. And this is what I also teach, but like outside people saying it is so nice. Stop asking what they're going to do for you and start asking, how can I show up to help you? Mm-hmm. First and foremost, that's like the beginning of every good business relationship, not just influencers. And two, like understand marketing as a whole, like understand what happens in marketing. Like it's not just transactional. It is storytelling. It is, you know, some months we have certain products that we're trying to mm-hmm. launch and you might not be a fit for that product. That's not a personal attack. It might feel like it in the moment, but there's so many things going on behind the scenes. And knowing that marketing calendar, those key moments, that's such a good takeaway. Understanding like when does spring launch, Sephora sale, there's always deals to be had around a Sephora sale. Like there's so many things going on throughout the year, noting those in your own content calendar so you have enough time to like reach out and start making those coffee dates. So good.
And also I would say pay attention to what's happening in that brand's world, right? Like if they are always doing fashion week, reach out, you know, a couple of months beforehand or a couple of weeks before and say, hey, I'm planning on being in New York for New York Fashion Week. Can I attend the shows? Are you planning anything? Just understand what's happening in the world of the brand. Because I think also it shows that you're invested. So then they're like, oh, okay, like this person is not just sending out a mass email.
Yeah,
they actually want to work with me. So like then I think it, again, just keeps you top of mind. So yeah. And then I think just from like a growth perspective, I can talk about this all day when it comes to content creators, because I'm so passionate about it. Be consistent on your channel. So how do you show up? How often are you posting? You know, I've seen things where people would reach out and like they hadn't posted in 3 weeks. And I'm like, well, are you active or are you just wanting, you know, free stuff. Or, you know, their content changes so often that I'm like, okay, well, what do you talk about? Like, is it beauty or are you more just like lifestyle? Like, are you just a fashion? Like, be consistent with how you show up, what you're talking about. And because we pay attention to it.
Yep. Love that. Such good takeaways for people. Okay, let's zoom out a little bit to the beauty industry as a whole. Where do you see beauty going this year? I mean, I think we've had such an interesting couple of years in the beauty industry with like innovation and products and new brands. I do think that this is going to be, you know, a milestone year for beauty in terms of both positive and negative. Brands will close that have been potentially looking for investment and not gotten it. I think there are brands that have been on that cusp that are going to skyrocket. You named one of them earlier, Summer Fridays. What are you seeing? Like, what are you excited about right now for this industry?
I mean, I am excited for a lot of like the indie brands, like a Summer Fridays. I love Mariana Hewitt. I've worked with her from a professional standpoint. So again, this might just be more of like an internal bias because she's such a great influencer partner to work with. And she's amazing at keeping up those relationships, right? And so launching Summer Fridays, I've always been really invested in what she's been doing. And you know, I'm excited to see how a brand like that can go from indie to potentially, you know, a big player, like, you know, some of the brands that, you know, I've worked at or are represented by the parent company. So really can't excited to see how these smaller brands show up and kind of like where they go, and do they seek investment, or are we still wanting to be an indie brand? I think that's always an interesting conversation. So I think that's like one of the bigger things. I think from a content perspective, I am interested in seeing how beauty content continues to evolve on platforms like TikTok. Because, you know, I was joking earlier in a meeting that it's kind of like, 2010 content is back. Like, people are doing empties on TikTok. And like, you know, empties videos hasn't been a big thing. And I think it's looking again where the like economy is. People are really, really choiceful about where they're spending their money. So they're consuming these things of like, do you really like this product? Like, why should I spend my hard-earned money on your brand and product? And so how can we as marketers, or even as a consumer, how can we show up and make sure that people like, okay, this is not just like a product you have to add and it'll be yet another highlighting palette or yet another this or something. It's like, no, this has to earn its place on your vanity.
Absolutely. I think those are such great points and things to look out for. Speaking of TikTok, TikTok Shop.
Yes.
What are your personal feelings? What are your professional feelings? What have you bought? Tell us everything.
I tried so hard not to get sucked into the TikTok shops. But like everyone, I feel like I've been, you know, consumed by it. Sure. Willingly or unwillingly. Personally, I have a love-hate relationship with it, because I work in the industry, I tend to look at things from like the marketing side. I'm like, I know what this is doing, but I do wonder about the authenticity thing, right? Because I think so many people are nervous of like, is this a real product? Is this not? Is it worth it? I always look at like the pricing. So yes, I bought, is it Due? Charlotte? I bought two of her products only because it was so deeply discounted on TikTok shops. And so in my mind, I'm like, wow, like it's, even though I follow her and I respect her, I never was able to convert on her site, but here I am buying things because it was so affordable. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, what does that do to brand equity? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Because on one hand, I was able to, you know, buy into the brand. On the other, you know, working at a prestige brand, I'm like, does that impact brand perception? So I think it's still one of those things that people are still trying to figure out. I do worry, again, like I mentioned, about the authenticity, like how do you control that, particularly for some of the smaller brands. It is interesting. I don't know if we're there yet in the U.S. to get people to fully buy on a platform like TikTok, only because we have such other like Sephora and like Ulta and such amazing loyalty programs. So it's kind of like, how do you compete with that? But I still think we need to watch the space. I think TikTok knows their audience and they know how to get you not only to consume content, but to really want something. And, you know, I'm interested to see how it evolves.
Yep. Me as well. I think especially for the beauty industry, I think one of the best things about the beauty industry is that they're early adopters to everything.
Yep.
They're always like, let's try it, which I love. And we've, you know, seen the same exact thing with TikTok Shop. So I'm so excited to see what happens. I think it's a really interesting time for them and a very interesting time for TikTok all around 360.
Do you find that like your influencers are like into it? Like, I'm so curious about like their feedback.
Yeah. I think they also have a love-hate relationship with it. And what's interesting is that your traditional influencer who is successful on TikTok with partnerships prior to TikTok Shop is annoyed. Right. Because now if the brands that they previously curated a partnership with and had great relationships with open up on TikTok Shop, there is a plethora of people, right? 5,000 followers as the threshold is not that high. And there's so many people now who will go into TikTok Shop specific partnerships for a higher commission for, you know, just the gifting. So it's really done something very drastic to the influencer marketing industry as a whole, because people who prior to this launching having followers, they didn't maybe think that they were influencers. They didn't really think about selling. They were just on an app and having fun. And now that they can sell, it's like, oh, like I can be an influencer. I can make this cash, but they're drastically undercutting in the industry standards for pricing. And they may not go at it with the same integrity that full-time creators or, you know, larger creators who've been on apps longer are going at it, right? They could just go ahead and hawk a skincare product or a makeup mm-hmm. product without fully knowing what it does, who it's for. So I think it's a push and pull. It's very yeah. exciting, but I think a lot of creators feel negatively towards it, but there's so many new creators because of it that are so excited. Right. So we'll see, just like
I know.
Yeah. Okay, amazing. So looking forward for you, what are you excited about this year that you're up to? Are you going to like start blogging or doing anything again? Are you ever going to reopen the content creator door? Is that closed forever?
I would say never, sure. because to your point, you just said like people can become accidental influencers, right?
Yeah. I love
the written word. So I did mm-hmm. start a Substack. I secured the URL. Have I actually posted on it yet? Not quite. Substack mm-hmm. is a platform, I guess, or a content vertical that I'm so interested in because again, it's writing, it's in your inbox. There's something about it that seems a little bit more intimate and kind of personal.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I am interested in kind of that world. I always joke that like I'm an on and off content creator. I go through these moments where I'm like uploading on TikTok for like a week straight and I'm like, look at me. And then after a while, I'm like, no, thank you. So we'll see. I think about it only because I do love beauty so much and I can talk about it nonstop. And, you know, before this, I was just going through beauty recommendations with a couple of my friends and the girls mm-hmm. in the office and, you know, anyone who's willing to listen. So I never say never. Right now, I am focused primarily on work because I do think it's important to have not just representation, like as content creators, but, you know, mm-hmm. within the decision-making spaces. So that's one of the reasons why I focused on more of my mm-hmm. corporate career is, you know, I didn't see a ton of women of color, Black women mm-hmm. in particular. And so, I don't know, maybe it was like pie in the sky or naive of me. I'm like, I'm going to be one of those executives in the workplace.
You are.
And so I kind of made it that. So I'm really, interested in pursuing that, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. I feel like life is always evolving. I might become the next Jackie Aina. Who knows?
You never know. Or maybe you'll like scrap that law school finally and just go straight for the MBA.
Yeah, I don't know about school anymore. I've passed that age where I like someone telling me to do homework is like, No, thank you.
Yeah. Speaking of platforms like Substack, where do you think is an interesting space for the beauty industry to be in a marketing or community realm that is kind of like new, undiscovered a little bit? What are you watching?
I'm always interested in these kind of like niche micro communities, whether it mm-hmm. be, you know, something like Geneva or taking the not just having like a platform like TikTok, but like really building your audience and giving them a place where they can connect and where they can really communicate with one another. You know, I think of like mm-hmm. how Facebook groups used to be a thing and sure. it still is to some extent, but having these like little moments or the little areas where people can just be like, they can nerd out as your brand fans. I think Glossier did this a long time ago with their Glossier Reps program, right? Like they had a Slack channel and everyone, I know people who became really good friends because of the Glossier Rep community, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know people who launched their influencer careers because of that. And they did a really good job of, you know, getting these people to be super passionate fans. So I think that's something that I'm always keeping an eye out. I'm like, how can we continue to monitor that? How can we nurture it? How can we grow? And then I always keep an eye out on, you know, Web3 and kind of like how digital is evolving, whether it's like, I know at one point everyone was talking about the metaverse and then that kind of died down. So it's how can we build these like digital experiences? NARS has done a lot of really interesting things on like Roblox. So it's like paying attention to those and see, you know, is it the Twitch community, which I think could be interesting. Mm-hmm. So I would say those are probably like the top three things that I'm always keeping an eye out for.
Nice. Okay. Well, as we wrap up, I think that we've touched a lot on influencer, but if you're someone who's listening, who wants just a career in the beauty industry, or maybe you are working at content creation, you're like, I want to make the switch and I want beauty industry to be the full-time gig. What are some things that you would recommend to them, whether it's something to read or a podcast or, you know, a way to connect with people like an event? Mm-hmm. How would you guide someone who really wants to join the beauty industry?
Definitely networking. And that could be in a couple of different ways, listening to podcasts like yours, finding out some of these like thought leaders. So I think of someone like Katie Welsh, who, you know, was a CMO or at Rare Beauty, but she has an amazing position at Rare Beauty and she's very vocal. I think she's also someone who became an influencer in her own right. But she talks often about marketing and kind of being able to get your foot in the door. So finding some of these thought leaders, following them, reaching out, speaking to them. And then if you, you know, do want to be more in-house or on a brand side, I would say reach out to someone and try to grab a coffee and see how your skills can help the brand or the company that you're working for. I'm always joking, like if I see someone who is a content creator on their resume, I'm like, oh, I'm like, can you be on my social team? Are you like really smart and like nimble and can you create content? Because that is something that the brands will need, right? Like we're always seeking like more and more content. So having someone who understands the platform and you know how to do it is super beneficial. So it's see how you can transfer your skills and your love of a platform to what a brand needs and being able to articulate that.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think LinkedIn is so underrated these days.
Oh my God, yes. LinkedIn influencers, as I call it, like these are actual like marketing or, you know, people in the industry, like, and they're out there, they're talking. So
for sure, reach out get to out them. There. Yep. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so glad that we were able to do this. You are definitely a wealth of knowledge. You've been in the industry for so long, and we're so happy that you are now stepping into this big role and moving forward and kind of like guiding the next wave of beauty execs. We love it.
Thank you.
Of course. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait for everyone to hear this episode and take all the notes. And if they have questions, we will drop a link to either email you or your LinkedIn or your IG. We will give everyone a way to reach out to Eileen directly with any questions or to connect with her.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I love seeing how you've been able to kind of transition your career. So this is it's so good, like kind of growing up in the industry together. So thank you for giving me this time.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we will talk to you soon. Thank you so much, as always, for listening to Lip Service, the podcast with me, Sonia Elise. If you just can't get enough of me or this podcast, which I know is the case, please follow me on Instagram and TikTok at sonia.elise. That's SONIA.ELYSS. In addition, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review this podcast and just let me know what you think. As a thank you for being a listener, I will be selecting a monthly winner to receive a free one-on-one session with me. All you have to do to enter is screenshot the podcast and share it on your Instagram stories, tagging myself as well as at Lip Service World. If listening to this podcast has inspired you to invest in your journey as a beauty creator, don't forget that you can get my eyes on your account with a custom profile audit. It's $35, the same as a Stanley Cup, but it adds way more value to your life. Don't forget that sharing your life online can spark joy, so just hit post. Catch you on the next episode.